Thank you for tuning in to Sounds of Dissent. My name is Amy Grunder. The operating license of the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant in Plymouth, Massachusetts, expires on June 8th. The plant's owners want a 20-year extension of that license from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, despite outstanding public safety and environmental concerns at the 40-year-old facility. It looked like it had the green light last month when the commission's top administrator recommended a yes vote, but that vote didn't happen. Out of nowhere, it seemed, local opposition to the license grew and spread from town to town, stiffening the backs of state and congressional representatives, the attorney general, and the governor, who urged the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to deny the vote. For now, two of the organizers of that effort join us today from Kingston, Massachusetts. Anna Baker is a member of the steering committee of the Pilgrim Coalition, which got underway just last January. A mother of two children, she became a citizen activist for nuclear safety after discovering the Pilgrim plant's design similarities to the Fukushima nuclear reactor. And Pine Dubois is executive director and founding member of the Jones River Watershed Association in Kingston, Massachusetts, also part of the Pilgrim Coalition. Her group has been monitoring the environmental impact of the Pilgrim nuclear plant since 2006. We're also joined by Paul Gunter, director of the Reactor Oversight Project at Beyond Nuclear, an anti-nuclear organization in Washington, D.C. Welcome, all of you, to Sounds of Dissent. In the past few weeks, the public profile of this licensing issue has grown by leaps and bounds. The Pilgrim Coalition is right in the middle of it. Anna Baker, you're on the steering committee. What's got people so upset with the licensing process?
Well, I think part of the problem is that the plant was due to be relicensed in June, or the license was expiring as of June 8th of 2012. And the plant has been was originally designed for 40 years of operation, and the 40 years of operation is up. And now we are looking at some significant problems in safety that need to be addressed. And before the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, relicenses it, a lot of the citizens around here want to make sure that at least these safety fixes that the NRC has recommended are addressed. And so far, these safety fixes have not been addressed, and we're very concerned that the plant's going to be relicensed in an unsafe position.
So your coalition has only been around since last January. How did you manage to get the attention of state officials and congressional representatives? You've had letters from a variety of officials to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. How did you do that so quickly?
Well, this has been a real uphill educational battle for us. I mean, it's really a matter of informing the public about the risks that Pilgrim poses to our health and safety. And once people hear about the issues, they're concerned. So it's been really just a matter of getting the word out. We're trying to use Facebook and Twitter and email to educate our friends and our networks about the current significant safety problems that the plant poses, and we're doing things like using change.org to send citizens' petitions to the governor saying, hey, we do care about this issue. We do want you to help represent us in terms of the current relicensing issue, and just spreading the word. That's our major battle here.
And if I can
go ahead, Pine,
a little bit. Yes, we've also found that there are flaws in the permitting that we were not aware of. For instance, the Clean Water Act permit, both under the federal regulations, the EPA, and the state, expired 16 years ago, and there are endangered species issues that are not addressed. So when we uncovered those and we bring those to the attention of the legislators and congressmen, then they have real concern that the agencies of government are not really taking care of business. They're not protecting the people and the welfare and the environment that they should be. And so that, I think, has contributed to the level of interest on Beacon Hill and the Capitol.
There are some 17 groups in the Pilgrim Coalition, many of them local. Some of them have opposed relicensing of the Pilgrim nuclear power plant for years since it first applied in 2006. Is it fair to say that the Fukushima nuclear reactor meltdown last year gave these groups a shot in the arm?
I would say that not only did they give us a chance to speak up about this, but they also you know, Fukushima, if there's anything good that happened from it, it would be that it educated people around the world of the problems with the Mark I containment vessel that Pilgrim is, which was also the same design as Fukushima. Paul Gunter could speak a little bit more clearly about that specific issue. But Fukushima was a wake-up call for a lot of us, and we're hoping that we can use it to make our areas much safer so that we don't have to go through that and we don't have to be the next victims of a nuclear disaster.
So what are those design similarities? Paul Gunter, do you want to jump in here? What makes the Pilgrim plant vulnerable? There's no threat of a tsunami. There's no earthquake fault. What are the concerns? What are the health and safety concerns that you're aware of at Pilgrim?
Well, our concern has been that the General Electric Mark I boiling water reactor was identified as early as 1972 by the Atomic Energy Commission, which is the predecessor of the current Nuclear Regulatory Commission that's doing the licensing. But one of the chief safety officers, Dr. Stephen Anauer, in an analysis of the GE Mark I containment system, found that it was fundamentally flawed, essentially undersized for the potential severe accident that it was designed and credited to withstand. And Dr. Hanauer told the Atomic Energy Commission that the federal government should discourage the further use of these nuclear power plants of this design and issue no more new licensing for these reactors. And instead, the Atomic Energy Commission and its successor, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, issued 16 more operating licenses for these GE Mark I reactors. And now we have 23 of these designs operating in the United States, essentially identical to Fukushima Daiichi. And on March 11th, when the accident occurred there, spawned by a prolonged station blackout, which was caused by the earthquake and the tsunami, we saw that a 100% failure rate for the three operating reactors there to not withstand the severe accident, to not contain the hydrogen gas that exploded and released radiation, essentially all over the Northern Hemisphere, but with significant concentrations in northeastern Japan and the ocean. So we're concerned that any number of events could trigger that same prolonged station blackout, where you have the loss of off-site power, the failure of on-site emergency power, and the damage of the nuclear fuel, which then generates hydrogen gas, and all it needs to do is find a spark at that point, and we have a similar catastrophe on our hands. And that could come by fire. According to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission documents, one of the leading contributors to the risk of core damage comes from a fire affecting the safe shutdown and the power systems at a nuclear power plant.
So you're talking about an accident where somehow a fire would start and lead to a chain reaction of events.
Again, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has said that a fire that's initiated by problems coming out of the electrical grid, mechanical failure, operator error. We've seen events like this occur, and right now, I think that it's important to understand that there are a whole host of issues. It doesn't take a tsunami or an earthquake. It could be a hurricane. It could be a
ice storm.
Prolonged outage from ice storms.
It could be a switch like happened in Boston in the last couple of months, yeah?
It could be a tree limb across an electrical line. You know, there are any number of events combined with mechanical failure or operator error could cascade into a fire that then basically lights the fuse of an atomic catastrophe.
Now, there are some 400 union workers at the Pilgrim Power Plant who voted on May 4th. These are members of the Utility Workers of America, Local 369. They voted to strike if they don't reach a contract with the owner of the plant, which is a Louisiana-based company named Entergy. They have to reach a, their contract expires on May 15th. The Boston Herald reported that this union cited outstanding healthcare staffing and safety issues. Has the coalition had any contact with those workers, Anna or Pine?
Not yet. We have reached out to them, but we have not had any direct relationship with them at this point.
What about local support for relicensing the plant? 400 jobs is a lot of jobs in this economy.
Well, the truth of the matter is that regardless of what happens with relicensing, let's say for a brief moment that my wildest dream comes true and they have to, you know, take steps to decommission, which ultimately they're going to have to at some point. The thing is not going to go on forever. All of those jobs, based on the experience up at Maine Yankee, would stay in Plymouth working on that. And in fact, the reality of the situation is the spent fuel will have to stay in Plymouth. And so there will be jobs associated with putting that to bed, if you will, as well as maintaining surveillance on it. So there's a lot of work still for the industry and the unions, regardless of which way this goes. And there's also, I think there won't be any problem for those people to get jobs elsewhere or to transfer into safe jobs.
And Amy, let me just add, this is Anna Baker, that, you know, if there were to be an accident, heaven forbid, those jobs wouldn't exist anyway, never mind the livelihoods and jobs of everybody around here. So we're focused on, you know, the main problems at hand, and that's really the point that we're trying to make.
And all the other jobs in southeastern Massachusetts as well.
What about the spent fuel issue? You mentioned that the spent fuel is going to stay in Plymouth. Isn't this one of the issues with the plant as well, that these that the fuel is being kept in pools? I don't know if they're open to the air like they are in Fukushima. Paul or Anna, do you want to say something about that?
Well, let me just say, first of all, I'd like to comment on the jobs that, in fact, what Germany now is demonstrating, you know, where they're shutting down nuclear power plants, and their goal is to shut down all of Germany's nuclear power plants by 2018, that they're putting more people to work, that there are more union jobs in renewable energy, efficiency, and conservation than in nuclear. So we need to be making a shift to what, in fact, is an economic boom to for renewable energy. But I think that we fundamentally always come back to the fact that we now have a mountain of nuclear waste more than 70 years high. From the first chain reaction in Chicago in the production of a nuclear weapon on December 2nd, 1942, we don't know what to do with the first cupful. And all of Pilgrim's nuclear waste, which I believe right now is close to 750 metric tons.
Which is double what Fukushima had, by the way.
Yes, is sitting in a pool on the roof of the building in high-density storage. And our concern is that right now, as has been the story, it doesn't have any place to go. And the more that is generated, the more that problem is compounded. We could be moving, and we're urging the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the industry to begin to offload these high-density storage pools, which are, you know, elevated 6 to 10 stories up. They're above and outside of the primary containment. and they're basically under a weather cover, which is not a pressure-rated structure. It's not at all a containment-rated structure. And what we're looking right now at Fukushima, particularly at Unit 4, is, again, one of these storage ponds that was damaged in the explosion. And it's the concern is that it's leaning, it's listing with about 189 tons of nuclear fuel that, if it topples, would catch fire and a radioactive release many times larger than what happened in all four units during the accident would be released in Japan. Now, that's only 189 tons in Unit 4. We're talking somewhere on the order of 700 to 750 tons at the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant. That, I think, begins to put the risk into some perspective that this plant should not be getting a license extension in the absence of any scientifically accepted and proven long-term radioactive waste management plan. So, you know, the first step in any long-term management plan for nuclear waste at this point is to stop generating it. And first and foremost, let's remember that Pilgrim, like any nuclear power plant, is first a nuclear waste generator. That's the legacy. The electricity is but a fleeting byproduct, and once these things are shut, we still have the long-term issue of nuclear waste, which will be passed on from generation to generation without a single watt of benefit. So, you know, the first step in a responsible action plan is to stop generating it.
That's right.
Amy, if I can use Paul's point to just jump to one of the major points the Pilgrim Coalition is trying.
This is Anna Baker for listeners. Go on.
Hi. So I think the Pilgrim Coalition, one of our main points is to say that we feel the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is not doing its job to regulate the nuclear industry. And that's really the problem here. The problem is that, you know, all of this fuel that's stored way above ground that needs electricity to keep cool in this wet storage should be, as the task force that the NRC came up with had said essentially in the last report, should be put into dry cask storage on the ground so that the spent fuel pool hazard will decrease by reducing the density of the fuel remaining in the pools. But the NRC is not requiring that at a speed in which it's going to make the plant safer at the quickest speed possible and before the plant is relicensed. They're requiring it at, you know, I think it's a 5-year time frame. We're saying do it before the plant starts operating for another 20 years. And so the problem here is really that the NRC doesn't seem to be doing its job in protecting the health and the environment of the people around these plants.
Pine Dubois.
Well, we have concerns way beyond the spent fuel. Every day, every single day, 510 million gallons of water is being brought in the plant to cool it. It's generating electricity by boiling water, only 33% efficient. All of that water is being discharged back out into Cape Cod Bay, and it, as a thermal plume, it's at least 30 degrees hotter than the background of the bay. Over the course of the last 30 or 40 years, Pilgrim Station has sucked in the entire volume of Cape Cod Bay at least once. While they do that, they are killing fish, they are killing plankton, they are killing eggs. It is illegal for a fisherman to go out into Cape Cod Bay and catch a river herring, either in the bay or in a river, and it has been illegal since 2006. But Entergy is allowed to kill tens of thousands of river herring. River herring is being pushed onto the endangered species list. They impact the whales. They impact the cod. Back in 1988, we have congressional record that says the cod were radioactive that were hanging out around the discharge plume because of the fish, the bait fish that were attracted to it. The plant is unsafe from an environmental standpoint, and our problem is that with these expired permits by EPA and DEP, all the monitoring that went into
the facility when Boston Edison owned it prior to 1999 has not been occurring since Entergy bought the plant for next to nothing at that time. They have been violating the environmental regulations that every other person in the country is required to follow, and nobody is getting back at them. They're only saying, well, we'll consider giving you another 20 or 40 year license. That is not okay. There was never a presumption in 1972 when the plant first got its license that there would ever be an extension beyond 2012. Even in the congressional record in 1988, when they were considering shutting down the plant forever because of its safety issues, there is record there that says 2012 is the end. It is the end of time for this power station that takes so much from Southeastern Mass and gives so little. People have to understand that they're not getting very much benefit from this, if anything. It would be easy, especially for those people that still have incandescent bulbs in their house, to unscrew one of those, and that would replace the power that the Pilgrim facility generates. ISO New England, the power grid manager, has stated in a public meeting before the legislature in the Massachusetts that it can replace the Pilgrim power plant. It would not be an inconvenience. But the risk that we live under every day, from the environmental degradation to the hidden radiation that is being exhausted by the plant through its vents or discharged into the bay, that is not being monitored and measured. You know, just because people are not dropping dead in front of Rocky Hill Road does not mean that they are not affected health-wise. We spend a lot of time in this state to deal with health care insurance. Why are we allowing something that is damaging the people's health, that is irradiating the food we eat and the air we breathe, why are we allowing that to continue without the oversight that is required for every other industry and every other person?
Has the Nuclear Regulatory Commission ever rejected a relicensing request?
This will be their first.
We would hope so. I wanted to add something with regard to the record for the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant.
This is Paul Gunter.
One of the most comprehensive cancer studies that has been conducted with a focus on nuclear power plant was done by the Massachusetts Department of Public Health in 1990, where they looked at 23 southeastern communities in Massachusetts, and they concluded that the communities that were closest to the Pilgrim nuclear power plant had a 400% increase in adult leukemia. Now, this is the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. It's not an anti-nuclear organization. It has no bias other than to uphold the public health for citizens in Massachusetts. And this 1990 study has been central in the concern that the routine operation of nuclear power plants and their radioactive emissions carries a health consequence and carries a risk for those who, as the MDPH concluded, have the longest duration of residency and the closest proximity to the operating nuclear power plant. That was their conclusion. And right now we have a more extensive nationwide study being conducted by the National Academies of Science, they've just now come up with a methodology for doing the study. But the MDPH study was central in the modeling of what we're now going to be looking at on a more broader view of U.S. nuclear power plants all across the country.
Is that study available online if listeners wanted to access it?
I think that it is available through the MDPH. If you Google MDPH, that's Massachusetts Department of Public Health, through Pilgrim Watch. I believe that internet search will give you a link to the cancer study.
And Amy, this is Anna Baker again. The whole goal here is to let people know that this plant, Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station, is obsolete. The 40 years that the planned operation has gone on has lapsed, and now we're asking, or the licensee is asking 50% more of it. So 100% of the time that it was planned to operate is up. Now they're asking 50% more time, and that's given all of these problems, all of these risks that are now clear to us after Fukushima. Why are we going ahead and trying to let it continue operating?
Has Yuval in some way watched the effect of the Fukushima nuclear disaster, its effect on public opinion, its effect perhaps on policy? That's my next question. Has this disaster changed anything with regard to nuclear policy, in energy policy in the United States? And talk about the Bush administration, if you can. I don't know who wants to take this question. Jump in.
Well, this is Paul Gunter. I think that just briefly, we're concerned that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission once again is demonstrating a bias to protect the production agenda, to protect the financial interests of the nuclear industry, and subordinate the public health concerns, the environmental concerns that are coming out of the ongoing accident at Fukushima. For example, there has been a strong move, for those who are arguing that the plant should continue to operate, one clear avenue should be that the plant should be held to the highest safety bar. And in part that would be to enact safety measures promptly. Right now, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, in its orders coming out of the Fukushima disaster, has set implementation guidelines that are out to December 31st, 2016. So, and even that date, that far out in the future for implementing corrective actions, that's not etched in stone. But what we see again is foot dragging, stonewalling that favors a financial timeline rather than a public health and safety timeline.
Amy, if I could just jump in here too to say that while the NRC has been seemingly unresponsive to all of this public pressure, a lot of our local representatives are starting to speak up. The Pilgrim Coalition was able to, finally pressure the governor along with other organizations, but to say, listen, we want you to speak up and at least tell the NRC that we don't think the plant should that you don't think the plant should be relicensed in its current unsafe state, and the governor said so. Senate President Therese Murray just said so in a letter. Representative Keating and Senator Wolf and other senators across the state are also speaking up. And this is all because of A, heightened awareness, but also public pressure, so that these representatives know citizens like us will not just sit back and wait for the NRC to rubber stamp another license approval.
If people want to learn more about the Pilgrim Coalition, where would you direct them to go? This is our last question.
We do have a website, pilgrimcoalition.org, and you can sign up on our Contact Us page for our newsletter, which comes out bi-monthly. Very specific information is on there with letters and general information as well, but also the Pilgrim Watch is another organization here that has a ton of very detailed information on the plant itself.
And the Cape Cod Bay Watch.
And Pine, what about your organization, Pine Dubois?
Yes, the CapeCodBayWatch.org is where we are posting many of our letters, and we are working with other organizations as well that are concerned about the endangered species, the whales, the fish in Cape Cod Bay, and also JonesRiver.org. We post many of our things there.
Thank you, all of you, for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure and very informative to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Thanks
we really appreciate
us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Anna Baker and Pine Dubois of the Pilgrim Coalition, a group of Massachusetts organizations fighting for nuclear safety at the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and with Paul Gunter of the Washington, D.C.-based anti-nuclear organization Beyond Nuclear. For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder.